Welcome to Rights Watch, a program about human rights around the world from Human Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham. The Nobel Peace Prize ceremony for jailed writer Liu Xiaobo is coming up this week in Oslo. In the lead-up to the ceremony, China has been lashing out at the international community. They've accused the Nobel Prize Committee of supporting criminal activities in China. Phelim Kine is a China researcher at Human Rights Watch. He said that the prize has driven China's official tolerance for peaceful dissent to a new low.
They have launched a smear campaign against Liu Xiaobo. The Chinese government responded to the 2010 Nobel Peace Prize award to Liu Xiaobo by first off purging the internet and of any mention of this award and forbidding state media from mentioning it. So there's an active effort by the Chinese government to try to prevent Chinese citizens from even knowing it happened. Since then, the Chinese government has gone on the offensive, and first it attacked the Nobel Peace Prize Committee by calling them politicized and stupid, and has since focused its ire on Liu Xiaobo, calling him a criminal, a drunkard, an individual in the pay of hostile foreign powers, basically trying to smear him in the eyes of the Chinese people. Because his views have been in opposition to that of the government, he has been marginalized and censored to a large degree in China. So there's a large constituency who really have never heard of Liu Xiaobo until he won the Nobel Peace Prize.
And even though the Chinese government did try to prevent people from knowing more about him since he was awarded the prize, have they been able to get some information? Is there any evidence that people are recognizing what this award means or who he is?
Liu Xiaobo, of course, is a 54-year-old writer, former academic, who has spent much of the past 20 or 30 years actively advocating for peaceful political change in China and in active defense of universal rights and freedoms. He negotiated the peaceful withdrawal of thousands of students from Tiananmen Square in June 1989, saving countless lives. And he also spoke out in opposition of the Chinese government's policy toward the Dalai Lama and Taiwan in 1996. For both of those outspoken episodes, he spent time in prison or re-education through labor camps. So this is a man who has suffered for his beliefs. Now, what we're seeing is that in China, not many people know about him, but people who find out about him are curious because Chinese people respect the Nobel Peace Prize. He is the first Chinese to ever win the Nobel Peace Prize award, and people are curious. They don't see it as a partisan political award. It's not the Congressional Award of Honor. It's something that is very international in scope. And so we know of activists, for example, in Beijing who have boarded buses and spoken to people and saying, have you ever heard of Liu Xiaobo? Very often people say no. But when they say, well, he's won the Nobel Peace Prize and here's why, people are generally express support and excitement because Chinese people now more than ever are extremely aware of their rights, and they respect those who speak out for those rights. So someone like Liu Xiaobo really can be and is a symbol for many Chinese of the type of peaceful opposition to an authoritarian government that many of them feel and would like to express.
I really like that image of these activists just getting on a bus and talking this up. Is that something that you're seeing more of as the government sort of cracks down in different ways, people finding public arenas to speak like that? That's intriguing.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the government's campaign to ensure that there is no public discussion outside the very limited government narrative of Liu Xiaobo as a criminal, that they are going to extreme measures to ensure that there are not public forums to do so. This is going to create a lot of curiosity amongst Chinese about who this person really is. And amongst that, those people who, in Chinese, what kind of fanchang, who scale the wall, this information wall, the great internet firewall, and to try and get information outside of the limited official sources, they're going to learn more. And virally, his writings, his message, and particularly, I think the most important thing is that, you know, Liu Xiaobo is in prison, serving an 11-year prison sentence for advocating peaceful democratic change, political change, universal rights and freedoms through a document known as Charter 08. This is an online petition which was circulated first in December of 2008. This document is circulating more and more. It's getting around. So slowly but surely, more and more people become aware of these ideas and who Liu Xiaobo really is.
So you see this award as something that could have long-term positive effects, but for now, there is a lot of backlash. I saw that the very prominent Chinese artist Ai Weiwei was stopped at the airport, also a very well-known dissident in China. But is that connected to the Nobel Prize?
It's worth mentioning that within days of Liu Xiaobo winning the, you know, the October 8, 2010 Nobel Peace Prize award, a group of retired senior Chinese Communist Party cadre issued a public letter in which they applauded the Nobel Peace Prize Committee's choice as of Liu as a quote-unquote splendid choice. And they asked, demanded, that the Chinese government lift its stringent censorship regime, and said that the types of changes that Liu Xiaobo was advocating for were necessary for China to evolve as a growing international player. So that's happened in the short term. It's already emboldened activists or similar thinking people in China to speak out. But again, the backlash is intense. And like you say, Ai Weiwei, who is a well-known artist, architect, who helped to design the famous Bird's Nest Stadium in Beijing for the 2008 Olympics, was stopped from boarding a plane to South Korea onwards to Europe, apparently due to official concerns that he would try to attend the December 10th Nobel Peace Prize ceremony in Oslo. The Chinese government is pulling out all the stops to ensure that no Chinese citizens, particularly Liu Xiaobo's family members, friends, and supporters, make it out of China to go to Oslo. They are trying to silence them and ensure that the Chinese government's narrative reigns in Oslo.
And yet I would think stopping Ai Weiwei from traveling, someone who's so prominent, has a show at the Tate Gallery right now, seems like an odd tactic. It really draws attention to how very repressive China is in a way.
That's an excellent point, and it really shows what we've been documenting for the last 4 years, particularly since in the run-up to the 2008 Olympics and the violence in Lhasa and Tibet in March 2008. Essentially, what's happened is that in China, the security services are in the ascendancy. They are calling the shots. So that's why we see these very thuggish, crude tactics, which are in complete opposition to China, the Chinese government's often, strong advocation of its desire to become a responsible partner in the international arena. Instead, we're seeing them, you know, lock people up just for wanting to go to this ceremony, for forbidding high-profile individuals like Ai Weiwei from boarding planes, in spite of the fact that that will and has become international news. In the summer, the Chinese government dispatched Deputy Prime Minister Fu Ying to Oslo to tell the Nobel Committee not to award the Peace Prize to Liu Xiaobo, and threatening that it would hurt Norway-China relations if they did. And since then, the Chinese government has launched this furious campaign to try to dissuade any diplomats or governments from sending representatives to Oslo or from offering congratulations on December 10th to Liu Xiaobo. So this is an international campaign. It's showing us how the Chinese government's unwillingness to its lack of tolerance for international and universal rights and freedoms at home is spilling over its borders. This is a disturbing indication of how China's growing international footprint is going to be affecting the world.
And when we think about that, China's international footprint, I think about the U.S. reaction to this and how the U.S. government and other governments have, I guess Human Rights Watch has found that they've been rather appeasing to China. How has that played out in the wake of this award?
Foreign governments, particularly the U.S., the EU, the U.K., the traditional standard bearers of international and universal human rights and freedoms, have left the stage with regards to China. They've essentially allowed China to commit these types of abuses because there is more and more this perception that China is too big to offend, that China is too important. And of course, this reached the nadir in February 2009 when U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said specifically that the U.S. would no longer allow human rights to get in the way of other quote-unquote important issues on the bilateral dialogue agenda. But since Liu Xiaobo was awarded the 2010 Nobel Peace Prize, it's worth noting that the U.S. has gone out and congratulated him. However, we have been extremely concerned by the United Nations' response to this, particularly Secretary Ban Ki-moon, who has expressed tepid support, to put it mildly, and has really gone to great lengths to apparently not offend the Chinese.
And to what do you attribute that? What position is China in at this point that would happen?
The timing of the Nobel Peace Prize in October was right in the run-up to the period in which Ban Ki-moon has been attempting to lobby governments in order to get a second term. So there are strong suggestions that Ban Ki-moon was concerned that by expressing support for Liu Xiaobo's Nobel Peace Prize award, he might endanger Chinese government support for his second term as Secretary General, which is dispiriting to say the least, given that the UN is the highest ultimate arbiter and protector of universal rights and freedoms in the world.
I'm thinking about how basic the things Liu Xiaobo is asking for are. When we talk about Ai Weiwei also, I mean, the kind of public art he's been doing or the things that he focuses on are an investigation or more accountability for children dying in the earthquake because of faulty buildings and schools. Mm-hmm. So I just want to talk about that a little bit, about what these threats to the Chinese government are. What are these people really asking for?
The fact is that Liu Xiaobo and the more than 10,000 signatories for Charter 08 and Ai Weiwei, they all share the same concerns and the same goals. They want the Chinese government to recognize and defend and allow the rights and freedoms that are embodied not just in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, but also in China's own constitution. Article 35 of the Chinese constitution allows for freedom of expression, freedom of association, a free media. Freedom of religion is also embodied in the Chinese constitution. It's a beautiful document. And Liu Xiaobo and other activists are not advocating revolution. They are not advocating ideas or goals which are antithetical to those that the Chinese government has already signed up on. They are advocating for the rights and freedoms that are already promised to them by their government but are systematically denied. Why are they denied? The Chinese government has a 61-year monopoly on power, and they are determined to hold on to that. So anything which they perceive as threats, they take care of and they silence and stifle as quickly and as ruthlessly as possible. For example, just in the last year, we have at Human Rights Watch have documented the arbitrary arrest and enforced disappearances of thousands of people into black jails in Beijing and other cities. We have documented arbitrary arrests and enforced disappearances of dozens of people in the Xinjiang, the minority Uyghur area. There are serious concerns about abuse of suspects and torture in Tibet. So these are issues which span the country, which affect untold thousands of people, and for which Liu Xiaobo at this point of time really has become the symbol. And for that reason, it's really important for the international community to speak up loudly and directly to the Chinese government to say, you know, these types of abuses should not be allowed to stand, that there must be change. The Chinese government must respect its own laws. We are not, this is not a question of the West versus China. This is a question of China versus its own people and the Chinese people demanding that its government respect its own laws. In the end, that is what's going to make a prosperous, stable China that's essential to the health and well-being of the entire international community.
That was Phelim Khine. He's a researcher at Human Rights Watch. And that's Rights Watch for this week. Human Rights Watch is an independent organization dedicated to defending and protecting human rights around the world. For more about us, including audio, video, and multimedia features, visit hrw.org. Thanks for listening to Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham.